The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, gamble wisely, folks. Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day! And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's Monday in Sin City, and you are watching Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined as always by my well-dressed and dapper colleague, the Professor Dave Malinsky.
Coming up today, how the dwindling number of unbeaten teams is leaving slim pickings in the BCS race. Connect that one, $165 million. You'll figure that out. How the best defense sometimes is a good offense. And in our special Halloween edition, we've got a play in Kansas City tonight that we think is all treat and no trick. We hope.
Speaking of Halloween, Dave, I'm dressed up like Mike Greenberg today. Looks like you're a Golic? Kind of Golic-y?
That's it.
No Halloween whatsoever?
That's it. It's Halloween today, and that's the best you could come up with. I'm going to dress up as Mike Greenberg on Halloween. Kira must be so proud.
Well, you know, we got the contacts in today, you know, so that's a little bit different. You know, we wanted to stop the reflection off the glasses and the holes in my head and all that kind of stuff that came with the specs. So, yeah, we put on some contacts. You're the one that told me I look like Greenberg. You look like Golic.
We will do sports today, folks. That's a promise. We will. We'll get there. We will do sports.
So, first take for the weekend. What'd you see? What do you want to share?
One of these magical things about sports, and if you're going to do this day in and day out and make money off of it, learn to enjoy the ride even when it's a bumpy one. And Saturday night college football was one of those magical situations. We had a nice ticket in our pockets, Ohio State, Wisconsin under, 51's available middle of the week. We grabbed one of those. And it's a game that you don't believe there's even a remote possibility of losing when it's 7-3 in the third quarter. And when it's sitting on 20-14 with less than 5 minutes left, you think, here's another one we've got that's going to be very easy. Well, you know what happens. Braxton Miller breaks off one play that creates a wild sequence to the end, and you lose. But you don't feel too bad about it because what a magnificent ending that was. And at the very same time, Stanford and Southern Cal are two heavyweights wailing at each other in the 14th and 15th rounds in the Coliseum. You lose, but the magic of the sport, if you allow it to, brings you right back in, makes it a special day. That's something you're going to need to do over time because there are some roller coaster rides here. Teddy, what do you bring back from this weekend?
Well, it sounds to me like you're a college football fan. You know, I'm no fan. I'm a Blackheart when it comes to college football and NFL. I have no favorite teams. I'm not in for the love of the sport. I want to make money. And when I lose a bet, even a right side loser, like, for example, that Ohio State-Wisconsin total that you talked about, I don't enjoy it. No enjoyment at all. My first take this week, well, we talk about the basics of handicapping, and there are three, you know, time-tested ideas that people bring up. There are situational, there are fundamental, and there are technical ways to handicap a game. There's a fourth way in the modern era that we'll call market-based, where you're just looking for under and overvalued teams. But the bottom line is fundamental, situational, technical. That's the standard thought process when it comes to different methodologies for handicapping any type of sport. Well, this past weekend in college football, boy, the situational plays, which haven't really worked. This has been a season where the bottom line is, more than anything else, the market value plays have worked, and the other methods haven't been as effective. This past weekend, just about every situational bet cashed. No, look no further. UAB coming off their first win of the season. They go to Marshall and get annihilated in that ballgame. We had Georgia Tech coming off two bad losses, returning home at night against Clemson. One-sided game there. The Yellow Jackets come through with the win and cover. We had Ohio State coming off the bye week, whereas Wisconsin coming off the excruciating loss at Michigan State. Another wire-to-wire winner for the Buckeyes. Perfect spot play. We talk about Louisville beating Syracuse. Syracuse coming off that big Friday night blowout win at home against West Virginia, then going on the road. We had even UNLV, even our own running Rebels coming off a bye, able to beat a Colorado State team that wasn't nearly as fresh as the Rebels. So spot plays won this past week in college football, something to be aware of perhaps moving forward. And now it's time, of course, to shift over into Market Watch for Monday. And time also to tip our cap to the St. Louis Cardinals for a tremendous postseason run. As you know, and you probably saw in some of the major media outlets, St. Louis as high as 999 or 1,000-1 in some spots in early September, I should say. A couple of bettors cashed some very lucrative tickets on St. Louis. But this morning we get news that Tony La Russa is going to be stepping down, quitting while he's ahead as the Cardinals manager. Is there anything that this Tony La Russa announcement, Dave, is telling us perhaps about what's going on behind the scenes in St. Louis right now?
Yeah, a couple of interesting things. One is we'll talk about the La Russa legacy, but first, the timing of that announcement makes you wonder if Albert Pujols is not coming back. That would seem to coincide a little bit. Give me a little insider info that, okay, if Pujols isn't coming back, I'm La Russa, I can go out on top. Here's what's great about the legacy, though, and we enjoyed so much of the postmortem, not ours but theirs, after St. Louis won that World Series, hearing the announcers talk about the La Russa way and about how the Cardinals won. What's interesting is this World Series had almost nothing to do with any of that. You wanted to think about fundamental baseball, playing smart, playing sound. This World Series was bizarre for the Cardinals. They lost the game because they misplayed a cutoff. They lost the game because there was a miscommunication in the bullpen. You got a runner picked off a third base when the bases are loaded. One of the worst things a base runner could ever do. A runner misses a sign and gets caught stealing in a key situation. And a miscommunication between a shortstop and a left fielder left a fly ball to be dropped at a key juncture in a game. St. Louis actually played sloppy baseball. It wasn't the fundamentals that won it. It was the talent. They had some guys that came up and made big plays when it happened. But were you surprised, Teddy, by the La Russa announcement, especially coming this quickly after that triumph?
You know, I can't be surprised by it, Dave, because the bottom line is Tony La Russa started managing in the major leagues when I was in middle school, okay? That's a long time ago. You know, he's been a major league manager, what, 32 years, you know, which tells you a little bit how old I am. But the bottom line is, for Tony La Russa, it was a heck of a run. And why not? I mean, clearly there were some issues in the World Series that you just mentioned, Dave, that maybe the Cardinals weren't clicking on all cylinders. Maybe everything La Russa was supposed to do didn't work the way it was supposed to. But the bottom line is, why not quit when you're ahead? Why not quit on top? I have a lot of respect for guys that are willing to go out riding a wave of glory than the guys that come back and you know, end up getting swept out of the playoffs, like, for example, Phil Jackson's Lakers did last spring.
And we talk about those waves of glory and championships. A big theme for this week is going to be now how the BCS race is transforming. A couple of other unbeatens fall on Saturday. Of course, Kansas State, an unbeaten that really wasn't a part of the process. But now it's clearly down to a group of three for the at-larges: Oklahoma State, Stanford, and Boise. Looking like Oklahoma State, the way the ratings came out last night, just went out, and you cannot be caught by Stanford. What's really interesting, though, was the way Boise is rated. It looks like, based on our reading, the Alabama-LSU loser, if that's a close game, Teddy, could still be ahead of Boise, which of course is going to make those people upset, but that does impact the way these games will be played out.
No question. I mean, Boise really has to think about margin over the course of the final month of the regular season. They have one step-up game, per se, at home against TCU, and if ever there's a spot that Boise is going to look to prove that they deserve to be in the national championship picture, it's going to be that game. So don't be surprised if, when the lines come out for that Boise TCU game, if the Broncos are laying a little bit more of a price than the power ratings might say that they should be laying in that ballgame. But right now, Boise State margin means everything. But what about this Stanford Cardinal team? Stanford, they could beat Oregon, they could beat Notre Dame, they could finish the season undefeated, and still Stanford would not be in the national championship. They'd make a BCS bowl game for sure, but they would not be playing. And there's a possibility, Dave, that the loser of the Alabama-LSU game this coming Saturday, and yes, we'll get to that game, we promise, although it's not going to be all week, all the time, like you're going to find on the four-letter networks. We'll get some Alabama-LSU in there, but not exclusively. There's plenty of other good games on the card for the coming weekend. But the bottom line is that the loser of that game could still be very much alive in the national championship picture.
Yeah, at least, though, we have, if things flow the way we think they will, some outstanding opportunities in these bowls. And that, yeah, you could end up with an Alabama-Oklahoma State. But you know what? There'd be nothing wrong with an undefeated Stanford playing LSU. That could give us one heck of a matchup.
Guys, you've been giving us great questions. We're going to answer those emails again today. Please keep those emails coming. The email address, sportsday@covers.com. We have the toll-free listener rant line, 866-966-4599. And, of course, get involved in the community. Covers.com/posting forum. Active threads and discussions going on right now. When we come back, it's a Halloween edition of Postmortem.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, Covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front-row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
This is David Ivey from Pub Crawl. It's funny because this is David from. Wait. You should just leave it on. Hi, I'm David Ivey from Pub Crawl, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. And scene.
Okay, guys, time to scrub up. Let's get those surgical gowns on. It's time for the postmortem, where we take you deep inside the game to show you things you should have seen, but probably didn't.
Let's start with what we talked about last week on this show, where we broke down in a postmortem segment about how fantastic Tom Brady had been in his career against the Pittsburgh Steelers and those Dick LeBeau defensive schemes. Yet yesterday, the Steelers controlled the game wire to wire. So as will usually be the case, whenever we see a major swing in a pattern, it means even extra attention here in the operating room to see what we can take with us going forward. So the first question, if we're discussing Brady versus LeBeau, why is there a picture of Ben Roethlisberger up on the screen right now?
If you ask Dick LeBeau who was the best defensive player for the Steelers yesterday, he'd probably tell you Ben Roethlisberger. Here's how you stop Tom Brady. In the first quarter of that game yesterday, there were 29 plays. Pittsburgh had the ball for 26 of them. 26-3 doesn't give Brady much opportunity, and that game plan worked throughout. Steelers ended up with 78 offensive snaps, the Patriots only 50. One of the things we had talked about with New England is they were tied with Buffalo, dead last in the NFL at yards per play defense coming into the week. Now they have dead last all to themselves. That was a very vulnerable Patriot defense. The Steelers found holes, didn't have to strike deep down the field. They found ways to possess the football. But that wasn't all. Dick LeBeau, who had many, many struggles against Tom Brady because of the inability to cover the running backs and the tight ends, tried something different yesterday. Let's go man up on the wide receivers at the line of scrimmage. They still got beat by the tight ends. They still got beat by the running backs. There were 14 passes completed to them. But only 10 passes completed to wide receivers the entire game for only 75 yards. They threw Brady out of rhythm by getting physical with those smaller Patriot receivers at the line of scrimmage. They couldn't get off the line of scrimmage and get out into their patterns. Here's the way Brady wraps it up, and we think it's an interesting comment. I don't think we did a very good job handling it or adjusting to it and playing against it, referring to that physical style. They played pretty physical. We really didn't match their physical style. That wasn't just an issue yesterday for the Patriots. That might become an issue weekly as teams see that those wide receivers don't have a lot of strength to get off the line. When you look at the Oklahoma State players celebrating by making that O look, you might think it stands for Oklahoma. or you might think it stands for offense. It's been an absolutely brilliant run by Brandon Whedon and that offense to get them up to number three in the country and in firm control of where they sit in the BCS standings. But let's look at the other side of the ball, and that's going to lead us to something interesting to break down in the weeks ahead. How about a defense that's number 111 in the nation in yards allowed, number 84 in rush yards allowed, number 101 in pass yards allowed, and number 62 in points allowed? They've only held one team under 24 points all season. How do they overcome that? It's been turnover ratio, but here's where it gets awkward. So many times at this time of year, we're looking for the teams with the biggest turnover ratio to pull back and the teams with the worst to pull forward. Teddy, is that going to be the case with Oklahoma State this year?
I'm not convinced that it will, Dave. And we talk about Oklahoma State, there are some really good numbers that go along with those bad overall defensive numbers. Let's take a look at that number one in the nation turnover margin. As you mentioned, you would expect a reversion to the mean here. You would expect that turnover margin, in theory, to come out of that top of the line and move down just a little bit for Okie State to lose the turnover battle in a couple of games. Not necessarily. Brandon Whedon, their quarterback, 28 years old, far more mature than just about any other quarterback in college football. And it's an offense that has done a phenomenal job at avoiding mistakes, avoiding putting the defense in bad field position situations. The defense, the numbers aren't pretty, but there are a couple numbers that are pretty. They're number 18 in sacks in the nation, and they're also number 25 in pass efficiency defense, which tells us that they're getting good pressure on opposing quarterbacks. They're forcing teams into doing not what they want to be doing, getting out of their game plans, and that secondary is making plays all game long. So there's no Big 12 championship game this year. We're looking at a final four games of Kansas State, at Texas Tech, at Iowa State, and then Oklahoma in the regular season finale. And basically, three of those four games, absolutely. If Okie State doesn't bring their A game, they're facing teams that are capable on their best day of beating them. But when we look specifically at the statistics here, this is an Oklahoma State defense that is better than the stats show. A lot of the yards, points, completion percentage, all of that stuff, a lot of that has come in garbage time of blowout wins. When this Cowboys defense has had to get a stop all year long, they've gotten the job done.
When we come back, it's going to be time to clean out the mailbox, which today had no little pieces of chocolate, nothing Halloweenish. It's our first Halloween show. By next year, maybe you guys will get it. And we'll explain how the Saints were sinners on Sunday. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
Hey, I'm Al Mann. Is that how you get them to do that all the time? Just sit there and be an ass. Is that it? Hey, I'm Al. Hey, I'm Al Mancini at Top of the Food Chain. You are watching the Vegas Video Network. We got big forks, big spoons. I got a big mouth. I got no guests.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
Before we go inside the numbers, it's time to answer our viewer and forum emails. And let's start today with a question from Brian in Boston, who goes, "Good afternoon, gentlemen. The show just keeps getting better and better." Yeah, I like this Brian guy. Keep up the good work. "I have a question about bullpen fatigue ratings and how one would go about grading them. Any advice you can provide for next season would really be appreciated. Please advise. Thank you." Thank you, Brian.
We brought this up because this came in on Friday of last week after we talked about bullpen fatigue ratings being a big part of Game 7 of the World Series. So even though this won't come up again until April, we have our own charts that we'll put in front of you then. There's a general rule of thumb is that after back-to-back nights, any closer or setup man starts to get a fatigue rating. When someone's going to have to pitch three straight days, many times they will either not be available, or if they do pitch, they're not going to pitch up to their capacity. Obviously, after three straight days, it gets even worse. And then we'll talk about individual games. Anytime a reliever has gone more than one inning or more than 25 pitches, we also attach that fatigue rating there. So those are the little things we look for. When we get to baseball season next April, we'll actually show a graphical chart on the screen that you'll be able to take with you. Next letter comes from Kevin in Los Angeles. Again, we appreciate the letters. We do like chocolate. Okay, Halloween next year. Do we tease for Valentine's Day, or is that a bit awkward for sports bettors?
If someone's sending us Valentine's Day chocolates, Dave, it's more than a little bit weird.
Okay, keeping in mind that anything you send to this office likely will be re-gifted to Kira, because we know how some people are. From Kevin in L.A., last week you talked about how teams that went undefeated deep into a season often came out flat right after their first loss. But what happens the second week? Do they tend to stay flat, or do they pout for a little while and then come right back?
You know, I'm an amateur poker player. Amateur, I guess. I'm a decent poker player. I'm certainly not a superstar. But people ask me poker questions a lot, and 99% of the time the answer is, it depends. It depends on the situation. Similar story right here. It depends. In general, the later in the season, the tougher it is for a team to bounce back off of their first loss of the campaign. October losses, better than November losses. November losses, better than December losses when it comes to bowl games. So it's not unusual for a team, it's a commonplace for a team to come out flat following their first loss. But another thing that can help is when they get a chance to really pummel somebody weak. And those type of games can get a team right back on track. But when a team coming off that first loss faces another test the following week, well, you'll see sometimes what we saw this past week, for example, in that Wisconsin-Ohio State game. Dan from Michigan, we're going to answer your question that came out of the posting forum when we talk about money time. Of course, we'll break down the Monday night football game for tonight. But that answer is coming later. But keep those questions coming in. You can post them in the forum, and you can send those emails, sportsday@covers.com. All right, it's time to go inside the numbers. Dave, what have your crack team of researchers come up with us for Monday?
They're probably out getting candy somewhere. At the top of the show, you had talked about how it was a big week for situational performances in college football. One of the reasons why this happens is, you know, people say, why does a team play so well one week and come back and struggle the next? Sometimes when you play real well, or if something comes too easily to you, you get thrown off stride. If you saw New Orleans against Indianapolis last Sunday night, you saw as easy of an NFL win as there's ever going to be. The Saints got to halftime without even having a third down play. But sometimes that's bad, not good, when something comes too easily. You lose your focus, you lose your rhythm. So what happened yesterday in St. Louis? You look up at halftime and it's 17-0 for the Cardinals. How significant is that? Well, when we go inside the numbers, I'm going to show you how long it's been since the Saints have been shut out in the first half of a game. 73 straight games going all the way back to September of 2007 against Tampa Bay. What was the problem yesterday? St. Louis came into the game next to last in rushing yards allowed and dead last in yards per rush allowed. The Saints only ran the ball six times in that entire first half. Instead of addressing that opponent and doing what they were supposed to do, the sloppy habits from an easy game the week before carried over.
Coming up, the news you need to know in our insider, I'll save it for after the break, six-pack.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want, on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
And now it's time for our insider six-pack, where we drop six chunks of knowledge on you for this upcoming football weekend. And let's start with the Pitt Panthers. The news on the scoreboard was good for Pitt on Thursday night. A 35-20 win over UConn. Comfortable win and cover. However, other than the scoreboard, some really disturbing news for Pitt fans. Lost for the season. Running back Ray Graham, who's been the best back in the conference this year, 964 yards, 9 touchdowns, and also their leading receiver out of the backfield. They also lost wide receiver Cameron Sadler with a season-ending injury and offensive lineman Matt Rothram. Three key contributors all gone for the year for the Pitt Panthers. Now they're going to have Wisconsin transfer Zach Brown as the running back this week. He managed only 30 yards on a dozen carries against the UConn Huskies. Tino Sunseri was a monster in that game, really. 459 yards of total offense. But now Sunseri's going to have to face defenses that are going to game plan a little bit differently for a Pitt Panther squad without a beast of a running back in Graham.
You'll see in Kentucky's injury reports this week that quarterback Morgan Newton suffered a sprained ankle against Mississippi State, left the game, didn't come back. We may not see Newton starting this week, but it may have nothing to do with that ankle. It looks like he actually will be back at practice and he'll be fine, but we'll find out at practice tomorrow if he's number one or number two. Freshman Matthew Smith came off the bench and actually played pretty well for the Wildcats, keeping in mind that Kentucky was number 119 in pass efficiency. After that loss, only Kent State has been worse. So it might be time for a change anyway, given how bad Newton's season was. According to Coach Joker Phillips, he said, yes, we'll have a decision to make, saying that it's not an injury that's going to dictate it. But from offensive coordinator Randy Sanders, we found some of these comments interesting in terms of evaluating Smith. He said, I hesitate to say this, but I'll say it anyway, but Max has as much arm talent as any quarterback I've ever worked with. Coaches in the South will say but in the same sentence twice. We know it's bad grammar, but you'll hear that linguistically. But here's what he adds, though. Physical talent, if I could get him to practice with the same intensity he showed out there tonight, then I think we would be making progress. I think you can read between the lines a little bit there. Matthew Smith has the tools, might not have the savvy yet to be starting in the SEC.
Yeah, but Morgan Newton's got to be benched because it's been an ugly season for Wildcat quarterback play. Let's talk about Army and Air Force right now. We're going to be waiting it out here, certainly the lines makers are as well, to determine the status of both starting quarterbacks in this ballgame. Trent Steelman, the Army QB, did not play in their 55-0 rout over Fordham this past weekend. That game was a done deal before it even started. The Black Knights knew that this was a game they could easily win without their starting QB, and they're going to let Steelman get a little bit more rest with his knee injury before determining his status for the coming weekend. On the Air Force side, Tim Jefferson broke his nose in the 42-0 win over New Mexico. Might have been the only thing New Mexico did right for that ballgame. We can project Jefferson to be the likely starter this week, although we'll have to pay attention to make sure that's the case. And it looks like the Falcons' brain trust is trying to put together a shield-type face mask so that he won't take any inadvertent bumps and bruises to his schnozola.
We're going to have some fun with this next one as it emerges. At the top of the show, we talked about how great it is to sit on a Saturday night and watch the pageantry of an Ohio State-Wisconsin ending. Stanford, Southern Cal, yeah, we love the sport. But we also love to see pampered athletes when they get their comeuppance. Chris Johnson at Tennessee, in a game they were controlling yesterday, wasn't on the field in the fourth quarter. There was a reason for that. He just simply was not effective. Only 34 yards on 14 carries yesterday. Javon Ringer, who replaced him, had the same number of carries, but he had 60 yards, almost double the production. It looks like we might be seeing more of Ringer, less of Johnson, despite that contract. Note that this late in the year, Johnson is at 2.9 yards per carry. Of running backs with at least 50 attempts this year, that's dead last in the entire NFL. He was pouting a little bit after the game, so Mike Munchak wanted to clarify the situation a little bit and did anything but that. He left it extremely vague. Here's the way Munchak attempted to defuse the situation. I think every game will be different. I just think it depends on the flow of the game, how it's going. I don't think we're consciously trying to decide by series who's playing. We know we're a work in progress as a run game. He's sort of preparing Chris Johnson to say, you know what, you used to be the man, maybe not anymore.
Yeah, chances Chris Johnson gets cut after the season. You think he's going to play out that contract in Tennessee? What do you make the number? I say he has to be the favorite to not be in Tennessee next year, to have that whole contract voided.
If they can find a way to do that, I mean, obviously they're going to want to try to pull a Carson Palmer sort of thing. Yeah, this guy can still play. Do you want him? It's going to be hard to take. That contract is so big. But here's the problem. Performance. If you're not performing, that contract is monstrous because, you know, we had noted that yards per carry element. How about this? How about dollars per yard? That is an equation that no NFL team is going to want to take off their hands.
Let's talk about St. Louis and Arizona this coming week in a matchup of NFC West bottom feeders. They're going to be question marks for both teams at quarterback until later in the week. We're not likely to see a line on this ball game until perhaps as late as Wednesday or Thursday, maybe even Friday. Now, the Rams rolled the Saints yesterday despite the fact that A.J. Feely, he wasn't very good. Let's put it this way. Feely had fewer yards per pass attempt than Steven Jackson had per rush attempt. And they certainly hope to get Sam Bradford on the field for this coming weekend. But again, Bradford's missed the last two ball games. That's going to be a question. For Arizona, Kevin Cobb was in a walking boot after yesterday's loss for Baltimore. And the first reports that he's dealing with a turf toe injury, and those things can linger as well. Of course, Cobb dropped back to pass 27 times in yesterday's ballgame. He was sacked on six of those occasions. That's certainly not a good ratio for any NFL quarterback.
If you're getting sacked every 4.5 attempts, turf toe is about the best thing, you know, that can happen for you. You're lucky it's not a lot worse. Let's go back to Dick LeBeau and the Steelers. Again, before we close this segment out, went into that game against the Patriots extremely shorthanded on defense. And if you looked up for the fourth quarter, who wasn't out there as well? Lamar Woodley went out with a hamstring injury in the third quarter. So think about how well the Steelers played. And they're without Woodley, James Harrison, James Ferrier, and Chris Hoke in that game. That's remarkable the way LeBeau continues to put those game plans together at the ripe age of 74, by the way. They're just a marvelous, marvelous story. And even on offense, we talked about how the Steelers controlled the football, how Ben Roethlisberger came up so big for them. That's without Hines Ward and Doug Ligurski as well. Tremendous job by that Pittsburgh coaching staff. Tremendous job by Roethlisberger. But the physical Ravens come to town this week. We'll be updating you as the days go by about how many of those injured players will be able to come back.
When we come back, we're going to put all of this news to work for you. It's money time.
No pressure. Hi, I'm... Hi, I'm Dennis Silvers from... Can't think of the name on my damn show. Golf and other four-letter words, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network, I think.
Okay, guys, it's money time! We're going to Kansas City. Wait a minute, my notes, it says, Kansas City, here we come? I have no idea what that means. It was written here in the notes, and apparently some of our older viewers will remember that song. Dave, perhaps you can give a little something-something here, because you're giving me liner notes. I don't even know what song we're talking about.
Fats Domino, those of you, not just with any age element, those of you with any class, any cultural sophistication, any fundamental working knowledge of American music in the 20th century, we'll get that one. Okay, back to football.
Yeah, we're going to Kansas City, obviously. Tonight's Monday night football game between the Chargers and Chiefs. San Diego -3, total 44.5 in that ball game. We've seen, I'll call it a trickle of KC money. This line opened 3.5 in most locations, now down to 3. Total is not getting a ton of action, but... Dave, we have Todd Haley versus Norv Turner, and so far, this has been a pretty one-sided coaching matchup, hasn't it?
Really surprised to see that there was some Kansas City money, because 3.5 to 3 might sound like a half-point move. That's a big move, to get down to a flat 3 across the board. These teams have not been in the same league. If you look at the matchups between Turner and Haley, 145-59 in favor of the Chargers on the scoreboard. Look at the stat columns, 2,016 yards to 1,003. It's been total domination. They played a close game on the scoreboard at San Diego earlier this year. When you watch the play-by-play, it wasn't quite that close. Total offense, about 125 yards to the Chargers. And even if you take away a 31-0 loss on this field last year when Matt Cassel didn't play, it's still a 2-1 San Diego edge. So now here come the questions we have to break down tonight. This is a weakened San Diego team without a couple of key players. You got Dielman out of the offensive line. He's a four-time Pro Bowler. Sean Phillips, a big pass rusher, is going to be missing on defense. But is that enough to say that Kansas City can close that gap? At least in the offensive line, the Chargers have some depth. They're going to have some new people. Gamble's going to get a start at linebacker tonight instead of Phillips. Is that enough, Teddy, to put Kansas City in the hunt here, or is the market overreacting a bit?
Well, I mean, KC opened the season with back-to-back really ugly blowout losses to the Lions and Bills. And everyone's like, oh, the Bills won five games last year or six? Lions won six games last year. Kansas City must be god-awful. They've been destroyed by these two teams. Well, guess what? You know, the Bills are a lot better than we thought they were going to be coming into the season, and Detroit has lived up to the lofty expectations that they had coming into the campaign. Those two losses for KC don't look quite as bad now. Even though they were really ugly on the scoreboard and equally ugly in the box score, the bottom line is they're not quite as ugly as they were when we're talking about Kansas City Chiefs a month ago. Since that time, and this is a classic case of what you can expect to see in the NFL, KC opened the season back-to-back disgusting blowout losses, non-competitive affairs. Well, guess what? They played four games since. They're 4-0 against the spread in those ball games, including three consecutive victories. But perhaps we're seeing the pendulum swing the other way now, where KC's covered four in a row. They've won three in a row. Well, who have they beaten during this three-game winning streak? Well, let's see. They beat a Minnesota Vikings team that had Donovan McNabb behind center, and they were life and death to win that game at home. They beat an Indianapolis Colts team that, still winless on the campaign. They were life and death to win that game in the fourth quarter. And then they had the one, I guess we'll call it the solid victory last week against Oakland. Oh, by the way, the Raiders were in the midst of a quarterback quandary. They threw six interceptions, two of which were returned for touchdowns. Maybe KC now, with those four straight covers and three straight wins, all against flawed teams, at least the three straight wins have come against all against flawed teams, maybe now the Chiefs have gone from being dramatically undervalued to perhaps a tad bit overvalued, Dave.
I think that's going to be part of our perception heading in tonight. Even though the Chargers have some of those issues, there are some positives for San Diego. Phillip Rivers was a disappointment at times last year and has had a very disappointing start to this season. In fact, if you count fumbles and interceptions combined, he's got 11 turnovers against seven touchdown passes. But something happened this week that literally has not happened often at all since the start of last year. Vincent Jackson and Antonio Gates, both at practice. First time all season, they were both fully healthy for practice. Rivers has dealt with so many different combinations. Remember last year, there were times where Gates, Jackson, and Malcolm Floyd were all missing. So he's had to keep working with different combinations. Now he's had a full week of practice with the guys he wants to throw to the most. And here's where I think this game starts to set up well, if you like San Diego. And we do. We're sort of giving a little bit away here. The Kansas City pass rush. Only six sacks all season. Only one player with more than one sack all season. When Rivers has his weapons, you had better get him out of rhythm. You had better be able to rush the quarterback a little bit, or he's going to sit there and pick you apart. When you've got Gates over the middle, when you've got the ability to get the ball to Jackson deep down the field, then it opens up for running backs out of the backfield. It makes that whole package work. Kansas City has not shown the ability to rush the passer this year. I think that's their big weakness in this matchup tonight.
There is a question we have to ask about San Diego, Dave, and it's a very valid question. The bottom line for this Chargers team, not 1 year, not 2 years, every year they seem to underachieve, both in the regular season and, of course, in the postseason, where they've yet to reach a Super Bowl, despite having as much talent as anyone in the league over the course of the last 4 or 5 years in the Norv Turner era. And the one role that the Chargers have been particularly weak in, laying points. They've not necessarily been able to beat down opposing foes. Now, it's a very different story when we're talking about laying three in this ballgame versus many of the prices that San Diego has to lay against some of the weaker teams they face when they're laying 7 and 9 and 11 and 14. They've been really bad in those roles. Is there a difference we can talk about here with the Chargers only laying 3 as opposed to laying a higher price?
Well, you like the fact that you're coming off of a loss that has you focused. You always like to look at a team off a loss when their key player brings a chip on his shoulder. That loss of the Jets last week, Phillip Rivers' interception in the fourth quarter, even though the ball went off a receiver's hands first, Rivers takes the blame for putting the ball in the wrong place. But here's what else we hear about San Diego. And it'll be interesting, because let's go ahead and get the play of the day graphic up, because you know who we're on the way we're talking about it. When you take a look at that logo, we have people say, you know what, the Chargers are soft. Well, how much of that is because of the uniforms? when you're wearing light powder blue, look at the image it creates. Now, think about this for a minute. Think about Ray Lewis, about how tough he is, about how dominant he is, because he's also wearing black and purple every week. You get that little menacing look. How tough is Ray Lewis if you put him in those pastel Charger colors? Some of this, folks, honestly, is just an image issue.
Yeah, and I agree with that, Dave. But the bottom line for San Diego, of course, this is a team that has never won a Super Bowl. We think about the great quarterbacks in NFL history, and the Air Coryell San Diego Chargers with Dan Fouts were the epitome of the Patriots with Tom Brady back in the 70s. They never made it to a title, and some of that perhaps hanging over the franchise and giving the Chargers that reputation. But the bottom line for us, Vegas Sports Day, play of the day for Halloween night. We're going to lay the points. Take San Diego -3. That's not the play of the night. It's a play of the day on Vegas Sports Day for Monday. And that's going to wrap it up for the Halloween edition. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to spend with us. For Malinsky, I'm Savransky. Enjoy the games and good luck.